Hi, and welcome to the latest podcast for the BCLA. Together with Fagerdien, today we are excited to have Nima here. He's just recently been to the NCC, and we're going to be talking about that today. So I'll let Nima introduce himself. So welcome, Nima, and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Thank you very much. Yes, thank you for the introduction. My name is Nima. I am a lecturer at the University of Bradford, a fellow of the BCLA, and one of the BCLA academic committee members. And yes, very pleased to say that I was recently at the NCC, where I chaired the scientific sessions for presentations on behalf of the NCC.
So thank you, Nima, for joining us today and sharing the experience you had by attending the NCC. And yes, thank you for chairing the scientific session on behalf of the BCLA. So just to kickstart our conversation, can you tell us about the NCC in brief? What were the scientific sessions and what was all about the conference? So we would like to hear from your perspective.
Absolutely. So the NCC is it stands for the Netherlands Contact Lens Congress. It is a conference that happens every 2 years in the Netherlands, specifically in a little town next to Eindhoven, city in the south. It's a very large conference, several thousand attendees, I believe. And it has several different tracks or kind of routes and different topics. So it covers everything related to kind of contact lenses and potentially anterior eye and other factors related to that. The scientific session that the BCLA working collaboration with for the NCC is one of those tracks and is there to present kind of presentations on behalf of kind of scientists, academics, researchers, or industry. On new kind of cutting-edge research that they want to present. Just to kind of expand on the NCC, it's covered over 2 days. The kind of main focuses for this year's NCC were kind of the future generation. So talking about myopia, presbyopia, kind of anterior eye, and kind of new technologies. The scientific track at the NCC was spread over 2 days, and it included over 30 talks lasting about approximately 8 to 10 minutes each, along with approximately 20 or 20 and above posters. But this was actually quite nice because the posters also have a short time to present about their kind of topic to an audience so that people that are interested can then go to see those posters if they find that topic of interest. So it's a nice introductory kind of taster for what that science may introduce.
It sounds really intense, but also really interesting as well. So as the moderator, so the papers presented, is there anything that you can share as like takeaway or something like clinical pearls of the findings?
Yes. The nice thing about the scientific track was that it was quite broad in its topics. So we had kind of specialized topics on presbyopia. There was a kind of a whole session on dry eye and kind of specialist lenses like scleral lenses. We had an entire session dedicated to myopia, an entire session dedicated to orthokeratology, kind of an entire session on compliance and practice-based research. The NCC themselves conduct research at their own conference. So they ask the attendees their thoughts and their kind of experiences. And it was really nice to hear the research they had done in 2022 was presented at this conference in 2024. In terms of big pearls to take away, it was very interesting to see some of the research being done for presbyopia. So for much of the presbyopia that we found, many people were looking at different lenses, different lens designs, use of fitting guides. And I'd be very happy to speak about that in kind of expansion later as we go through that. For kind of aspects related to dry eye, we had loads of different discussions, all the way from talking about eye drops to actual meibomian gland blockage designs and studies. For aspects related to kind of general kind of contact lenses and scleral contact lenses, we had loads of different things relating to even case reports of different scleral designs. But also talking about the impact of kind of scleral wear on changes or potential adjustments that happen from scleral wear at the front of the eye. Again, very exciting stuff to listen to. For myopia, which I must confess is my primary area of interest. We had lots of presentations talking about a range of different things, including spectacle lenses, which was really nice. So we heard about the different kind of contact lens designs that are available, some spectacle lens designs that were available, and some of the discrepancy differences between kind of prescribing and visual performance of those different designs. For orthokeratology, we had lots of new information given. One of the most interesting considerations was actually, again, considerations of interest or what parents found of interest for fitting or going for myopia management for their children in the Netherlands, which hasn't been looked at before. What was also very interesting is that we also had to be able to look at kind of orthokeratology in regards to some of the kind of safety, which has always been a question whenever you fit orthokeratology. Safety always comes up as a question. So that was actually one of the topics that was discussed. There were discussions in the posters for kind of loads of different factors. Again, some of the interesting ones were about a condition notified as or kind of acronymed as DFNA9, which I had never heard of before, but now I know quite a bit about. And then when it came to kind of some of the other aspects of research generally, we had nice, interesting comparisons of clinical performance and again, some of the NCC doing research aspects.
So thank you, Nima, for giving us this overview. I think looks like very interesting research papers. And as you said, the rapid fire posters were presented during the scientific session. And I mean, I was there to witness it myself, where you moderated almost all the sessions very enthusiastically with asking questions. And I think the audience also participated a lot in asking certain questions and having discussions. But let's just look at a couple of interesting sections, I would say, and dive deep into, and if you can share the research findings with us, starting from contact lens materials and things like that. So if you have certain takeaway messages on the papers which were presented regarding to contact lens materials, we would be happy to hear from you.
Okay, yeah, of course, very happy to do so. So, talking about kind of contact lens materials and kind of contact lens comparisons and clinical performance, there were many different interesting presentations that were given there. One of the aspects I found very interesting was a kind of a very strong conversation that was given discussing the patient contact lens journey. So, this actually not only just discussed if some contact lenses work better than others, that wasn't actually the main part. It was actually to discuss whether, as practitioners, us ourselves are getting in the way of successful contact lens wear. So this was discussed by Samantha Watson, and it discussed the kind of initial patient journey. It was looking at, as she described it, the pinch points of when someone who's going for a contact lens kind of appointment or journey to start wearing lenses, at what sort of parts would you be likely or potential parts are there of dropout? And what was really interesting is they tried to look at what patients would say from their expectations and practitioners would do. And essentially, I'm going to say the gap between our understanding of those kind of groups of people. So just to give one very interesting point, because she mentioned several different pinch points, but one of the things that she raised, which I thought was really good, was we seem to be in a position where we, as practitioners, unless it's a very easy daily disposable spherical contact lens, we don't have trial appointments or trial lenses to give our patients on the day that they come in for a sight test and a potential inquiry for a contact lens fit. What we tend to do is order those lenses and the patients come back. And actually, patients have the expectation that they would be able to go and trial that straight away. So it might be something that deters them from continuing on. And that was just one of the many different points that she mentioned. So again, it's worth considering things that we tend to overlook as practitioners as to what we may want to do. Another discussion that was given, which was very interesting, was by Dr. Reed at the University of Manchester. And his discussion was actually one that was of interest to me for sure. So this talked about the influence of contact lenses' kind of intrinsic properties and their handling characteristics. So again, as practitioners, we tend to overlook some of the things that we may take for granted. So for example, every patient who wears contact lenses with us will at some point have to go for a contact lens teach. And up until very recently, we didn't have any scientific evidence behind what What is involved in a teach? What do we use in a teach? Or anything along those lines. This went one step further to look at whether patients found the use of different lens powers and therefore thicknesses or different lens materials or types would have an impact on the ease of use or the ease of handling. And actually, it was really interesting to find that they did have differences, plus powers being more difficult than minus powers. Now, the interesting factor for that is in this study, they actually used the same patients trying on the different powers, and all the patients were either emmetropic or myopic. So I would say whatever they found might even be exemplified further, because if you have a hyperope who can't see that well up close and has a thick lens to put in their eye, they're going to find it doubly hard to do so again. So it just shows the large amount of data we don't have on that kind of area of contact lens wear. And one of the others that looked at several different comparisons or several different clinical comparators, both objectively and subjectively between two lenses, was by Lakshman Subbaraman, and they looked at kind of varifilcon A lenses against several different other lenses. And kind of they looked at several different aspects related to the performance of those lenses. That included everything from standard visual acuity to kind of subjective aspects of comfort, vision, and overall impression. What was interesting as well was for one of those kind of sub studies that they presented, he showed that actually the difference after 16 hours of wear was significantly there. What's interesting there is that studies don't usually insist on a specific amount of contact lens wear, which sometimes can maybe potentially skew some of the results that you may get, because contact lenses may be more comfortable for the initial, I don't know, 10 to 12 hours of wear, maybe even more. But given the average wear time may be listed as something as 15 hours plus or 16 hours, as he mentioned, it's worth getting an investigation for what their considerations were at 16 hours of wear. And most people felt that they were acceptable at that time, which is great to hear. And there were potential differences in those lenses, but again, there were many different comparisons given, and they were all listed and discussed. So, when it comes to materials, we can't not mention some of the more specialized materials, and that, for example, is scleral contact lenses. For scleral contact lenses, there was quite a lot of conversation. Some of thing that has kind of been discussed in previous literature is whether the kind of the impact of scleral lens wear on the anterior eye, biomechanics, and for example, intraocular pressure. So there were a couple of presentations talking about the kind of diurnal variation of corneal biomechanics, discussing whether IOP changed in patients that had regular and irregular corneas and were wearing scleral lenses. So there were several different kind of authors talking about this. And I think generally, to summarize, most didn't find a difference with scleral lens wear. So although this has been suggested in previous literature, the data shows that they didn't find biomechanical properties significantly change or IOP significantly change during scleral lens wear, which is a positive note because it indicates that it's something that we don't have to worry too much about for our patients.
So moving on from the materials, and that's some really great insights. And it is nice to see how, in a way, we're probably going around in circles, what comes up comes back again. And sort of the whole customer journey is so super important for anything to do with contact lenses. So if we're moving on to sort of the ocular surface and dry eyes, which is also a really big topic, was there anything there that you were finding interesting or clinical pearls?
Yes, absolutely. So dry eye and the ocular surface was definitely something that came up quite often. And in a similar theme, actually, talking about lens materials, one of the studies discussed actually looked at using scleral lenses as a treatment for dry eye. So this was presented by Wong, and they looked at whether patients who were eligible to kind of be fitted with scleral lenses as they were symptomatic for dry eye, they were then fitted with scleral lenses and were asked for their kind of opinions and reactions to that, and if their symptoms had reduced. And the study generally showed that the symptoms did reduce, and actually almost every second participant in the study was interested in continuing scleral contact lens wear because it helped with their symptoms of dry eye. So it's an interesting interesting way for a practitioner to try and consider treating dry eye by putting in a contact lens. Another presentation, which is actually by myself and my other colleagues at Buckle, which is the British and Irish University and College contact lens educators, was looking at Lissamine Green. Lissamine Green hasn't been used as widely as it could be compared to fluorescein, for example. And part of that may be because sometimes we don't know how best to use it. In our study, we looked at this and we found that actually using it twice, so basically applying the same strip of Lissamine Green twice with a minute break between them, can actually improve the visibility of staining in comparison to just using the single strip once. And that's what we presented there. Another presentation, which was actually a poster by our co-presentation here, was talking about the effect of using Tear Restore, which is a thermal mask for the treatment of meibomian gland blockage. And in that presentation, the use of the mask actually improved the speed questionnaire score and indicated a 47% reduction in the symptoms of dry eye. And there was an increase in tear stability and volume too. Something else that was of interest was the talking about hyaluronic acid derivatives. So this came up several times from different authors, and they were talking about, although we are quite, I would say the majority of practitioners are probably very familiar with hyaluronic acid, but actually the derivatives that you could make from that could potentially help with dry eye more than the actual base ingredient of hyaluronic acid itself already. So we had a couple of presentations on this, and the results generally showed that yes, they do potentially act or are more powerful, if that makes sense. So some of the studies covered on whether they remained longer in the eye and they had a better kind of symptom, kind of treatment effect, and I believe that they did. And this was in kind of two different samples, and therefore, given that it's been shown twice with similar kind of results, I think that's quite promising, and I look forward to seeing more details about this kind of derivative in the future.
Well, thank you, Nima, for again sharing those brilliant papers which were discussed and sharing their findings with us today in terms of ocular surface and dry eyes. And you did talk about scleral lenses as well for the management of dry eye disease. I think the next point of interest would be myopia. We know, I mean, it's been talked about for quite some time that myopia is a pandemic, it's an epidemic, and there are a couple of strategies being evolved and developed to control myopia. Any papers which you would like to highlight in terms of myopia and myopia control strategies which were presented in the scientific track?
Yes, so there was quite a lot of interesting discussion about myopia management. So we were able to get a discussion of MiSight and basically discussing the cumulative treatment effect after 6 years. So the MiSight study has had quite a lot of data behind it. It's nice to get even further into the kind of analysis of that. And we were able to see that and understand it from Elizabeth Lum, who presented that. And demonstrated that actually, yeah, we can kind of get an idea of the cumulative effect, and it is quite significant. Depending on the way that you investigate that, or the way that you interpret the kind of treatment success, you get different answers. But actually, one of the things I really liked about what she said was that at the moment, as far as we know, we don't have a kind of agreed upon definition of what we class as success or how we work or understand if something for myopia management is working. But actually, regardless of the way that you interpret that, the data shows that MiSight does have an effect for the majority of children who use it. Another one was talking about something that I find of great interest because I always want to know more about it because it's very different, is the use of diffusion optics technology, spectacle lenses, which is from SightGlass. So Professor McParland presented this and was talking about how the adaptation of children was in those spectacles and the kind of the long and short of that result is that children do adapt relatively well to those spectacles, and they don't really complain or notice any difficulty with the design, because that might be one of the considerations that practitioners have. The periphery is kind of visibly diffused. Would they have any problem with that? The children themselves didn't report any issues with use, nor did they have any difficulties with the kind of aesthetic appearance. So although myopia management exists, one of the discussions that is frequently coming up is, whether there is a difference between or a discrepancy between what we understand and the people that claim they want to prescribe myopia management and how often it is being prescribed. So essentially trying to understand the habits of practitioners, and actually the kind of attitudes of parents. So one of the factors, because this was the NCC, was looking at parents from the Netherlands and their kind of the factors that they have in their decision to proceed with myopia management for their child. And actually, cost was one of the least important factors. The factors that they found was most important were things like safety, the fact that if it had lots of data behind it, and that it was something that was recommended by the eye care practitioner. These were the factors that parents bared most important in their decision making. And this discussion about discrepancy between kind of what we say we would like to do or our attitudes towards myopia management and our prescribing habits is something that's come up quite a lot, as I've said. And this is something that Anna Sully presented, looking at a random sample of 100 optical practices in the US and kind of what their prescribing kind of habits were. And essentially, they found that although 51% of the children that presented had myopia in at least one eye, myopia management was not prescribed as expected. So actually, 53% of those that were prescribed with contact lens prescriptions to correct their myopia, they were all with soft single vision contact lenses, and the rest were kind of divided between torics, myopia management, and orthokeratology. But actually, myopia management and orthokeratology only came up to about 13%, 15% of contact lens fits. So while although half of the children had myopia, not all of them were prescribed for anything for myopia control. So although many may have been suitable, it seems that we may not be as confident prescribing this as we may indicate in some surveys. And one of the factors we get with myopia management, especially for orthokeratology, is discussions about safety. So as practitioners, we're aware that overnight wear can absolutely increase the risk of adverse events or potentially microbial keratitis. But because orthokeratology is not as widely prescribed as other forms of contact lens wear, we do not get as much information to look at the kind of prevalence rates of adverse events or disease. But because my orthokeratology is not a highly prescribed intervention in comparison to other modalities of contact lens wear, it's hard to get an accurate understanding of the safety or the level of adverse events that are expected. So one of the talk speakers, Jack Santo Domingo, presented some data that he'd worked on as part of his job, and he had collected data from 125 orthokeratology contact lens wearers and 118 control subjects wearing not wearing orthokeratology, and they found that 19 of those 125 subjects had an adverse event, and they had 28 in total for the entire kind of cohort. Of which six were significant and required some sort of action or intervention. And this means that 13% of the eyes wearing orthokeratology contact lenses are likely to experience some form of adverse event over the course of a year. One in 10 children or patients are likely to have an adverse event that would require them to seek help from from a practitioner. This figure is lower when you consider device-related adverse events alone. So, for example, the ones that are specifically related to orthokeratology. Of all the adverse events they found, nothing was significant in terms of the fact that it was kind of an infection, but they are enough that they required some form of intervention. So these inform kind of eye care practitioners into the safety level of orthokeratology in comparison to those that we already know, for example, for daily wear, and for RGPs versus daily disposables, and provides a lot of answers that many have asked to receive.
So thank you for those insights. And I suppose it goes to show, it just means that really as practitioners, we need to keep things up to date, you know, sort of do your research and make sure that you know what you're doing before you let loose on myopia management, I think. It's just, I suppose with the JOC and the CPD, we do have to keep up our skills, and we do have to make sure that we know what's going on after research. So last but not least, it's definitely a big topic for people over a certain age. What about presbyopia?
Yes, presbyopia definitely came across quite a bit in the NCC presentations. There were some interesting insights. So we had all sorts of presentations talking from everything from talking about fitting guides to talking about kind of the adaptation between different lenses. So some kind of highlights. So Michel Guillon talked about the kind of comparison of clinical acceptance, so visual satisfaction between kind of two different multifocal lenses and different lens designs. And kind of the results in short showed that there is a design effect. So essentially patients that kind of like multifocal lenses will have different preferences between if they have a kind of medium ad and a high ad. So essentially, the differences in those designs can sometimes play a factor into whether patients find them easier to accept or not. So alternative kind of multifocal designs should be tried if you find that your initial lens isn't suitable. So essentially, what this study kind of showed in his comparison of lenses is that it might not work first time, but it's really important to keep at it and make sure that you try other ones. And if a different design is available that you can try, you should definitely try it. It might, those designs do vary between kind of medium and high power ads. So really, it's worth making sure you communicate to your patients that you should try different types of lenses, and that the first one, if it doesn't work, doesn't mean that nothing is going to work at all. You definitely should keep at it. Another one of the papers presented was actually one of the Opti student winners, and this was by Katharina Manns, and she presented on essentially the examining the usage of fitting guides. So if you ever talk to any contact lens representatives, they will always tell you how much time and effort is spent in developing a fitting guide, but sometimes it can be frustrating if people don't use them because they tend to give the most success. So this was a cross-sectional study looking at just under 400 kind of practitioners that looked at the survey. And they found that actually about 75% of practitioners advised that they did use a fitting guide for the initial assessment and choice of lenses and how to work on that. However, interestingly, 25% did not. And many of the times when people reported they didn't use it, it was because they had felt that they'd gathered enough skills over time to no longer feel the obligation to continue, and they would almost understand what the fitting guide was trying to do. So it kind of gave really nice insight into kind of what the support that fitting guides provided for those specific lens designs can do. And there can be some discrepancies in terms of who fits them and who uses them and who doesn't. But further studies looking into these fitting guides to understand kind of what kind of things are included, what sort of factor would be useful, kind of would be good, because one of the things that this study was able to do is correlate between subjectively kind of assessed success rates and the use of fitting guides. And there does seem to be a factor to consider there. So there was no correlation between the use of the fitting guide and subjectively assessed success, but we need to understand more because no one has really looked at whether these fitting guides are extremely successful or not, although most people do understand the benefit of using them for their initial lens fit. And something presented by Jill Woods was talking about the kind of ease and predictability of fit when switching from multifocal powers that have a two ad system, so a high and low, and changing them to a three ad system, which is high, medium, and low. And they kind of looked at 58 participants and they fitted them in a kind of crossover daily wear design, subject masked, and essentially they found that the performance of the kind of the performance and expectations or the outcomes, if that makes sense, of the free ad system either matched or exceeded that of the two ad system based on visual acuity and participant ratings. So essentially, as new designs come out and they have different levels of ads, these can be changed to a different design, and they will probably be more successful, if not the same as the patient would notice in their current lens designs.
Great. So thank you, Nima, for, you know, sharing the highlights of the scientific track. I mean, today our focus was just to let our listeners know about the scientific track, but as we started the discussion, and as Nima mentioned, there were other tracks as well where there were invited speakers, and of course, there were demonstrations and hands-on sessions during the two-day conference with a large exhibit area where all the sponsors and exhibition was held in terms of the companies participating. So it was a very fun-filled two-day conference with the gala dinner on the first day night where everybody enjoyed. So it was a great time at the NCC. And if you're interested to read more about the papers and dive deep into the abstracts are currently available on the NCC website, which is the contactlenscongress.com. And you can read all the abstracts of the scientific track there. And they will also be published in the BCLA Clay Journal in an online format in the upcoming months. So if you are interested to dive deep into the papers which were discussed today and others which were presented during the conference, I would advise you to watch out there. So thank you so much for joining us and listening on to this podcast today. Take care, be safe, and watch out for our next podcast. Thank you, Nima, again for joining us. Bye-bye.
Would you like to join the growing number of eye care practitioners that have recently gained new certification with our latest online courses? You can now work towards the certificate in dry eye management and contact lens retention and the certificate in myopia management, along with our recent addition in the fundamentals of contact lenses. If you would like more information on the courses, visit www.bcla.org.uk.